The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hello, you guys, and welcome back to the What We Said podcast. Happy Tuesday. I hope you guys are having a great day thus far. I'm Chelsea.
And I'm JC.
And we're glad you joined us today because we are going to school again. This was such a good episode last time. We're going to explain, woman-splain things to you that we don't understand. Well, now we do. We do. And you will, too, in about
And there's a long list of things we don't understand. We could probably do 100 of these episodes.
Yeah. I really should have been taking notes because once an episode, I'm like, I don't understand that, and I would like to know. But I forgot when it came time. I was like, oh, I think I understand everything.
It's kind of nice to have a thought that you don't understand something, go down a rabbit hole and deep dive, and you're like, okay, I kind of understand that now. And now, if I had a conversation with a random person about this, I would actually kind of get it. I would kind of know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of nice.
100%. What's been up with you?
Oh, well, I have a story. I have a story to tell you guys.
Do I know anything about this story?
No.
Okay.
It happened today.
Oh.
So it's really fresh off the press. So I got asked to do this interview. I don't know if I can say with who. I don't know if it's like a secret. I think it'll already be out. But it's like a publication media company, like okay. kind of like a magazine or whatever, online. Anyway, they reached out and they were like, hey, we'd love to interview. We're doing an article or something about sharing fertility journeys online. And they wanted to get my perspective of just like the pros and cons of it and my reflections and like all this stuff. So I was like, oh, I'd love to. So I say yes to this interview and I was excited about it. I was like, this is a cool opportunity. It was today. It was this morning. So it was a phone interview. And so I get the call. It was supposed to be like a 30-minute-ish thing. We're probably 20 minutes in, maybe like 17 minutes in. And she just had a few more questions to ask. And so I'm on the phone with her and I get a call from Carter, my brother. He like beeps in on me while I'm on this interview. And I immediately just like send him to voicemail, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it's like beeping and she's asking me questions. So anyway, I send him to voicemail. Another call comes through. And it's him again. And I send him to voicemail again. And I'm like, okay, what is the
you start getting scared.
Drama? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I go to like put my phone on do not disturb. Because we're talking, I'm in the middle of an interview. Mm-hmm. So I'm like trying to do all this stuff.
It's not Zoom, it's just on your phone.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, so she can't see you.
No, she can't see me, luckily.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to put it on Do Not Disturb. And I just see a text pop up, it's urgent. And I'm like,
oh no.
So my heart drops.
No.
I am like almost like fuzzy headed. You know when you get like a.
Yes.
Just a bad feeling? I was like, oh my gosh.
Your heart sinks.
So,
yeah.
The interviewer is still asking. She's like, okay, so then da 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 da. And I cannot even focus on what Mm-mm. she's saying because right after I read that text. So I just kind of cut her off. I'm like, I am so sorry. I have an emergency. Like my brother's been calling and texting me. He said it's urgent. I need to call him back really fast. And she's like, oh, absolutely. Like she was super cool about it. She's like,
yeah.
Take care of it for sure. I was like, I will give you a call back if everything's fine.
I'm smiling because I feel like I know where this story is going.
And anyway, so I hang up and I call him immediately. My heart is pounding.
Yeah.
I sit down because I'm.
It's like a we need to talk text. Yeah.
So I sit down and he answers. He's like, hey, Jace. I'm like, okay. Now that sounded much too casual for me in fight or flight mode right now. I go, and I'm still. So I go, what's wrong? And he's like, oh, it's not actually urgent. I just knew you'd call me immediately if I said that. I go, Carter, I just stopped an entire interview for you.
Oh, no.
I was freaking out. I sat down.
No.
I was checking my mom's Find My Friends while I'm calling him to see if she's like at a hospital. Like, I'm like, what happened? And my heart is pounding. Like, I'm so anxious.
Carter, you're in trouble.
Oh, just wait. So I go. He goes, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Like, I just thought you'd be at home. And anyway, and I go, okay, well, what is it? Like, we're on the phone. So what do you need? And he's like, I can't tell you now. He goes, you're going to think it's so dumb. I said, yeah, probably. Because
at this point, if someone's not in the hospital, yes. It will be dumb.
I said, 10 seconds ago, I thought one of my closest family members had passed away.
Yeah.
So yes, I will think it's dumb no matter what it is. But what do you need? Like, what is it? He's like, I'm trying to watch March Madness. Can I get on your HBO?
Carter, you are going to jail.
I was silent for 10 seconds. I go, I'm going to kill you. That's the urgent matter we're discussing. When I just stopped an interview for you, it wasn't the end of the world, but I was just like, okay, you freaked me out. I'm literally, my heart is pounding.
That is the epitome of a little brother energy.
Can you believe that?
No.
He felt so bad. He's like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, yeah, you should be. And don't ever say something is urgent.
Yeah.
And call me and text me.
No.
When it's not a big deal.
No.
Oh my gosh.
Especially when I send you to voicemail. Immediately.
So.
Like if I ignore your call, if it immediately goes to voicemail twice, just know that I'm busy.
Yeah,
just know that I can't answer.
Exactly.
It's so urgent.
It's urgent.
The manipulation.
Can I watch your HBO? Cool. Also mooching off me. Like, goodbye. I was so, but I was also kind of laughing because I was so happy it wasn't something serious.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like mad, but I was also just like,
I'm happy that
everything's fine. Anyway, so
that's hilarious.
I called her back. I'm like, I can't even bear to tell her what the freaking situation was. So I called her back and I'm like, hey, I'm so sorry. It wasn't as urgent as I thought it was going to be. So everything's fine. She's like, oh, good. I'm so glad. And then we like continued
on. Yeah, me too.
She was,
I had to change my pants. I peed my pants. I was so scared.
She was super nice and it was not a big deal. Like the interview wasn't derailed or anything. I was like, sorry, can you ask me that last question again? Because I kind of blacked out from what we were talking about. She's like, oh, yeah, of course. So we finished off the interview, 5-10 more minutes, and then I was done. But I'm like, I cannot believe that.
No, that's
all for some
basketball.
Unreal. Wanted to watch basketball on my account. Can you believe?
No.
I'm like, wow, that's a learning lesson. Don't ever do that to someone if it's not urgent. That's so scary.
So scary.
That's really scary to get
I
that
feel
text.
Like that has happened to me with my little brothers before. Not to that extent and that, you know, timing, but where they're trying to call me a bunch of times and I'm
like,
oh.
I need you to answer.
And it's like, oh, you never reach out
to
me.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they're calling you, FaceTiming you.
That's
You're like, hey, what's up? They're like, hi, how's it going? I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, how are you? I'm like, I'm good. They're like, anyways, what I need from you is a log. It's always a log.
It's always a favor.
It's always a Netflix, a Hulu. Yeah, favor.
And that's why it did freak me out because like we keep in touch, obviously, but to like call me and be like, it's urgent. I'm like, okay, something bad happened.
Yeah.
Like that was the only thing my mind could go to.
Yes.
And I'm telling
that
you, I literally
naughty.
Got like dizzy.
No,
like,
that's
I was standing
really
up
naughty.
And I was like, oh my gosh, I have to sit down. Like I was so freaked out. And I was bracing myself for like, what is this going to, I don't know. And then just that, I'm like, wow, I am actually going to kill you.
No, so, he's naughty for that one.
Yeah. He's going to prison. So there's that. That happened to me this morning.
Oh my gosh.
And truthfully, like I said, after I was in actually such a good mood because I'm like,
thank goodness
everything's fine. Like, I cannot believe. Okay.
Oh
anyway,
my gosh. I was not expecting
update.
That.
I'll let you guys know when the interview comes out. It might already be out at this point.
Yeah, that's cool.
Batching.
I'm excited to read it.
Yeah.
It's like a written article.
Yeah. I think it'll just be online, but
nice.
We'll see.
Love that.
Mm-hmm. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, your social battery can really ebb and flow. Sometimes you can feel bursting with energy. Sometimes you can feel like you're just less social, you're not feeling it. And it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. I really do feel like things are picking up now that maybe the weather's warmer. I don't know if it is the season or what's going on, but I've been seeing a lot more people just doing a lot more stuff, and it can definitely drain you when you're just going. So it's important to kind of figure out, you know, what's the right amount of socializing for you? How do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need some more alone time. And therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that does not drain your battery.
When I've gone to therapy before, sometimes it's just me feeling drained or me feeling really down and wondering why I'm feeling that way so that I can work on it and work towards a solution. And therapy always helps to figure that out. So maybe it is because there's a big life change happening. Maybe I need to learn how to set more boundaries or just more positive coping skills or thought patterns. And therapy has just always empowered me to be my best version of myself. It's not just for people who've experienced major trauma. So like I said, maybe if you're feeling extra down lately and it's going on longer than you would like, therapy is definitely something to consider. So if you are thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/whatwesaidtoday to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/whatwesaid. Go check it out.
You guys know how much we love Way here at the What We Said podcast. If you will recall, we went to St. Bart's with Way. It was a dream come true. Mm-hmm. We got to use all their products for that week, and I still use Way products basically daily. They have such amazing hair products. They just came out with their new anti-frizz cream, which Leif has actually been using because he has naturally curly and pretty frizzy hair, and he's been absolutely loving it. So it's a lightweight cream that provides immediate frizz control that lasts for up to 72 hours. Leif is always telling me about how frizz and just his hair texture is, I don't want to say an issue, but it's something that is very time consuming to deal with. And you really have to find a routine that works to calm it down and to just make it look put together and to just feel confident with your hair. And so he has been loving this product. Also, all Way products smell amazing. So this is no exception. So it also has heat protection up to 450 degrees. It helps reduce and repair split ends while quenching dry hair with intense hydration. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed their hair looks less frizzy.
I told Abby about this product as soon as I saw it because she always complains about frizz. You know, that with those natural curls comes some work, apparently, from what I've heard from her. And so, especially living in a humid climate, it's so nice to have something that just holds it together for you. You don't have to worry about it. Way also just has the best products, some of their best sellers, like their leave-in conditioner. It's a multitasking favorite detangler, hydrates, fights frizz for all hair types. I love, love, love their hair oil. I always put it on the ends of my hair at the end of the day just to make sure that it's, you know, keeping my hair tends to be a little bit more fine and needs a little extra help. And it's very nutrient packed, absorbs quickly, and it keeps your color from fading and protects from heat damage. They also have the hair gloss, which is amazing for everyone because everyone loves shiny hair, provides immediate shine, it helps treat damage, and enhances color vibrancy. Frizz free, up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code What We Said for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code What We Said. Go check it out. I had a very shocking experience at the doctor's office. I posted a little bit of on my story a while ago, but when it actually happened, because I was too shocked to speak, to think, or to react, honestly. I've learned that in these situations, like, I would like to think that I'm this fiery, you know, person that will just stand up for myself
immediately. Stick up for your boundaries.
Silence. Silence. Same. And no movement.
Same.
Okay, so I get into the doctor's office for actually kind of something not stressful. Okay, so I had to get an ultrasound for something, and it was like my doctor had sent me there immediately to go check on something. So I was like stressed and anxious. Like I was just crying in the car. I was like overstimulated. I get to the ultrasound appointment and it ended up being fine. Spoiler alert, everything was fine. The ultrasound was great, but I didn't know that at the time. So I'm sitting in the waiting room. I go up to check in, and this older lady who had like an accent. I feel like she maybe was like Eastern European. I'm not, you know, so good at knowing my foreign accents by any means, but that's what I was guessing from her accent, whatever. Anyways, so as I'm checking in, she comes over and interrupts me. I'm like,
she's a patient?
Yeah, she's a patient.
Okay.
I'm checking in with the girl. I'm like, oh, my name, blah, blah, blah. I'm here for this appointment. And she comes right up to the desk right next to me while I'm checking in, is like, hey, I'm here for a blah, 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 blah. And the girl's like, I'll be with you in just a moment. She's like, yeah, well, I'm here for this and this. And she's like, I'll be with you in just a moment. Like, I could tell the girl was getting a little bit just like, yeah, okay, like, you're not getting it. You have to wait in line.
Mm-hmm.
So I check in. I sit down. That's just a precursor to her energy. Okay.
Okay.
Just so you know this woman. I sit down and she comes right up to me. And I'm actually wearing the same exact shirt in this episode that I was wearing then. Pretty much covering my entire stomach. She comes up to me and she's like, you really need to cover up your stomach. Your baby is really cold. Like, you need to make sure your baby's not cold. And you need to cover up with something. And I'm like, well, it's a little late. I'm already, like, outside and out for the day. I don't have a sweater. I'm, you know, it's a perfectly fine day. And as I'm saying that, she's like, I know, I have so-and-so amount of kids. I have so-and-so amount of grandkids. I don't
Did
even remember
what she said. Did you say how old
she was? Old.
Probably. She's not pregnant.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Oh, okay, sorry. I thought she was pregnant getting an ultrasound.
No, sorry. Yeah, she was old.
Okay, okay.
I mean, probably like 60.
Okay.
60-something. And she's like, you got to cover that up because when the baby's cold, they like hunch up and then they don't want to come out. And it's not good for the baby to be cold and like hunched up in your stomach. Like you want them to be able to be warm. She's like, go ahead and get into a jacuzzi, a hot tub. I said, oh, that's interesting.
Like
advice.
Right now?
I've never gotten in my life.
Yeah, the opposite usually?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's like number two thing you're not supposed to do while you're pregnant is get in a hot tub. Anyways, so I'm like sitting there like, oh, just like listening. Okay, whatever. She's like, yeah, you really shouldn't have your stomach out like that. It's not good for the baby, blah, blah, blah. I know things. She's like, she touches my stomach, starts rubbing
it. Not touches it.
Yeah, rubbing.
Oh, wow.
Rubbing and starts and says, I'm going to say a prayer over your pregnancy. And I'm like, okay.
No.
Starts praying in a different language. In a different language. I don't know what she's saying. I'm hoping it was a prayer and not a curse because I'm sitting there. I'm like, I don't know what the heck you're saying.
And that was before your appointment too?
Yeah. She's just sitting there. I'm like, ma'am, I'm so anxious right now. Like, I didn't feel like she was cursing me by any means, but I didn't know what she was saying. She's like rubbing my stomach in a circle, literally standing over me. I'm sitting. Do I say anything? Do I do anything? No. I'm completely compliant. I'm just sitting here like, okay. You know, she finishes. She's like, bless you and your baby. And I was like, oh, thank you. She's like, it's a girl, huh? And I was like, no. She's like, oh, this is your first? And I was like, no, it's my second. She's like, oh, first was a girl. I'm like, no, first is a boy. Like,
trying to like be like, I'm so intuitive.
Yeah, I'm so intuitive. Like, after she felt, she's like, it's a girl.
And
like,
he's getting all of it wrong. Yeah. Wait, that actually like brings me some sort of joy.
I know. Like, she was like, I'm Mother Teresa. Yeah. I know everything about children. I know everything about childbirth. I know everything about pregnancy. The thing, she was like, I know this might be a little, you know, what did she say? Intrusive or something. Like, I know, you know, it's not my business, but if I see something, I have to say it. I'm like,
what?
Because you saw this much of my stomach, you had to come over and say something to me?
Okay.
So I go home and I post that on my Instagram. Everyone's like, you need to sage your stomach. Like, some people have very bad intentions. I'm like, okay, well, I feel like I would know if I was getting cursed. I had an ultrasound pretty much immediately after and everything was great, but I was beyond. Wow. I'm like, can you imagine if just pregnant women in general, they just become objects. Like, they
literally.
Can you imagine if I walked up to a man who was sitting in a waiting room and just started rubbing his stomach? I would be arrested on the spot. Like, that is such a bizarre thing to do. Just because you're pregnant does not mean, it's actually weirder because there's someone else in there. It's like praying in a different language over my baby. I'm like, I don't know what you're saying, ma'am. Like,
that's a lot. What?
Can you just let me wait in peace? And she left.
Yikes. You know how that's a thing that people, I feel like older people will make comments on, like the belly being out.
Yeah.
And they always say, they're like, aren't you cold? I'm like, actually, thank you for asking. I'm freezing.
Yeah.
I was just thinking this the other day, when I have my stomach gets freezing.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait.
Like the skin?
Yeah, the skin. I'm sure the baby's fine.
Yeah, that's
but
the thing.
When like my bump is out, I'll like touch my stomach. I'm like, I'm so cold.
Yeah. No, it
I
is.
Like need to
well,
cover
it
up.
Actually was super windy that day. I think that's why she said something to me. And I was actually thinking the same thing. I'm like, I would love a sweatshirt, but I'm already out here. I wasn't planning on being at this appointment. I had to drive to a different doctor's office to get this ultrasound. I thought I was just going in for a routine check.
Yeah. Super quick.
So when she said that, I was like, it's a little late. Like, I don't have anything to cover up my stomach. Can I have your jacket?
Yeah. That is so bizarre.
May I borrow your sweater?
Wow. That is really something.
Whenever those things happen, because when people like, I don't know, complain about how people treat pregnant women or say weird things to them, sometimes it's like, okay, like, do they really do that though?
Yeah.
And then the amount of times things happen to me where I'm like, oh my gosh, you are so bold, my
literally.
Friend. I would never do that to anybody.
No.
And also, it's not like you're saving my child.
Also,
like,
just the comments constantly of like, the bump size even like really gets me.
Yeah.
Like
too big,
even,
too small.
Yeah, I don't even want to like get into it, but at an event I was recently at, like people were asking me how far along I was and then they just like make comments and I'm like, it's not an insult, but like It's just like it. Okay. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah.
To constantly be making comments, whether it's your bump, you're big for that or you're small for that. It's mm-hmm. I don't really want to.
I can barely tell.
Either of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
And I feel like a lot of people, especially when I'm wearing baggy clothes, they'll be like, if they haven't seen me pregnant, they're like, oh, you don't even look pregnant.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've tried for 4 years to be pregnant. Yeah. I would love to look pregnant
now.
I'll show you. Let me whip out my stomach. No. But it's like, can you just not?
Very rarely are they like, you look exactly along as you're meant to be.
It's like either
you look
the
huge
small thing or you're huge.
Are you having twins?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Just don't talk about it.
Yeah. That's a takeaway from the podcast that you should have learned by now.
And definitely don't touch it.
That's crazy.
Unless you ask.
Touching it is crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. Rubbing? Rubbing
someone's stomach. Rubbing. Without their consent and you have no idea who they are.
No.
That's beyond.
No.
It really is true. You kind of just become like an object of people's
advice.
Yeah.
And
everything.
Yeah.
It's like, I did not ask.
No.
That's
it was
wild.
Crazy. I was just sitting there like, oh my gosh. That really just happened. Okay. Wait, did I ever tell you about my experience with the tailor that I've been going to? This is a quick story. I brought my curtains in to get hemmed because they're super long.
Okay.
I had a bunch of curtain panels that needed to be hemmed. Mm-hmm. So I found this random tailor that had really good reviews. And I bring it in and it's these two older guys. And they do not respect me. I can tell immediately,
pretty much.
I come in with Case and I was very obviously pregnant as well. Trying to carry all these curtains in, this toddler, my bag, whatever. I bring it in and I'm like, hi, I would like to get these curtains hemmed. And they're like, okay. The attitude immediately was like, okay. So I'm like, okay, what do you need to know from me? Because I have the measurements of how long they are right now, what they need to be, how much you need to cut off. What do you want? And like, well, how long are they? How long do you want? Or how long are they? And I was like, okay, this is how long all of them are. 118 inches or whatever. And so he's like putting them. He's kind of like looking at me like I'm the scum of the earth. I'm like, what did I do? I just literally walked in here. I'm giving you business. I'm literally going to pay you so much money. I have so many curtains to get hemmed by you. And he's looks at the tag. He goes, 118. That's how long they are. I said, yes, yeah. That's what you asked me, sir. And I actually at this point, when it's a man, I actually feel like I am a little bit more
fiery.
Yeah. What? I said, that's what you asked me. He said, this is exactly what he does. No. How long do you want them to be? I'm like, okay, sir. Ask me that then.
That's a different question.
Ask me that and I will tell you. I have everything written down for you. So I'm like, okay, I want them to be this. And I'm starting to get pissed. I'm like, you are treating me so rude. I'm literally your customer, sir. And so I give him my information. He's like, okay. I go to pick it up a couple days later. And he comes out, immediately does this. These took so much longer than I thought they were going to be. This material is just blah, blah, blah. I'm like, it's
not my
linen.
Problem.
Yeah. You're
also
the tailor, sir.
Okay. Continue.
So I was like, okay, I'm sorry. What do you want me to say? Okay, thanks for doing
them. Charge me more or something.
And he was like, okay, so since I told you this price, I'll still do it. And I had brought more curtains. And I was like, well, these are actually the same, material as these ones. So just so you know. And he's like, okay, I'll have to charge you more. And I was like, that's fine. That's totally fine. He was like, it took me 10 hours. I was like, I don't believe that it took you 10 hours for some reason. That seems crazy. Maybe if you were being super, super, it was just two panels. So I was like, I feel like that might not be accurate. But anyways, maybe it was, whatever, regardless, I don't care. So I leave and I'm like, I go home, tell Nick, these guys at this tailor are so disrespectful to me. Their energy, they do not like women. I can tell. I don't know what it is. I say, you need to go pick it up for me next time when they call that these curtains are ready. I want you to go pick them up for me because I don't want to deal with them. And I don't want them to charge me more. Nick comes back. He has a smile on his face. I'm like, were they so rude to you? He said, they were so nice to me.
No.
Yeah. They said, he was smirking. He's like, they were literally so nice to me. He knew it was misogyny. He's just they couldn't have treated me better. Number one customer. He's like, I walked in and they're like, oh yeah. And then he goes, the person says something. Oh, I asked Nick to get the extra material from the curtains I had just dropped off. Mm-hmm. And the previous curtains, that I had dropped off earlier, I said, I don't want the extra material. So he goes and Nick's like, yeah, she wants like the extra material as well. And he goes, I guess the Taylor guy was like, she said she didn't want them last time. Like, that's when his attitude annoyed, came back. Yeah. When I was mentioned.
The mention of a woman. He's like, no. Can't handle.
Nick's like, I don't know. He's like, I don't know which, like, maybe she does want all of them, whatever. So he brought them all home. And he was just like, he's like, that was crazy. He's like, are you sure they were rude to you? I'm like, they were so rude to me. I've never been treated worse. They were great tailors. I will continue to go, but I will be sending Nick every time.
I have a tailor recommendation for you.
Really?
Okay. She's a sweet angel.
Oh, good.
We can give our business to women. A women owned
business.
That is beyond my comprehension.
So crazy.
And I can't when people again like make it your problem.
Like I'm you in don't your
tell
business.
Your yeah, you don't tell your customer, "Oh, this took so long." What you would do is if it starts taking a long time, call me and say, "Hey, this is taking longer than expected. If you want me to finish this job, I am going to have to charge you a little bit more for how long it's taking."
100%.
Great. Don't make it my problem. This is your business,
don't
not mine.
Don't try and guilt trip me. I don't care, actually.
You told me really a price. Sorry. Yeah. That is beyond.
No.
Oh, my gosh. That's hilarious.
I know,
I'm
so
dead
bad.
That they were so nice to him.
Yeah, he just
immediately.
Comes back. I knew by the smirk on Nick's face, like.
He had a great experience.
Yeah, he knew. He knew that they were just misogynistic. Gosh. Anyways.
Anywho.
Should we get into these?
Things we don't understand. Men
Can't
that
wait.
Are mean to
yeah.
women only.
Misogyny.
Do you want me to tell you what mine were?
Yeah, tell me.
Or should you just be surprised every time I go?
You go first and tell me the first one and surprise me.
Okay.
With the first one.
Chelsea told me what hers were, but I didn't tell her, so she's getting a little surprised. The first thing I don't understand, and this is the reason that I wrote this down was because of I saw one recently and I thought, okay.
It's I thought what?
It's blimps.
Oh, okay.
Now, what is a blimp? Why are you there? What's going on?
Why are there only like 10 or whatever?
There's not a lot of them. It's kind of rare to see them these days. And I'm going to get into why it's rare to see them. So, airships is what they're called, or like these balloons, whatever. They're a lighter than air aircraft that operate from a lifting gas that is less dense than the surrounding air, so it keeps them afloat.
Okay.
That's what a blimp is, or there's three types of these airships. One of them is a blimp, and that's the most common one. So there's, I don't really want to get into it because I feel like this part is boring, but it's like there's rigid, semi-rigid, and non-rigid airships, and the non-rigid airships are what people call blimps.
Okay.
So the difference.
Non-rigid.
The difference is that blimps rely on internal pressure to maintain their shape. Whereas the other one, the semi-rigid ones, they also rely on internal pressure, but they have the structure supported by like this metal thing at the bottom. So it's not really, it's neither here nor there to us. I feel like it doesn't really matter. So the first steam-powered airship, aka blimp, took its first flight in September of 1852.
Dang.
And that is 51 years before the Wright brothers' first flight. So blimps were claimed to be like the future of air transportation. That's what people
thought. Were there people in the blimp?
Yes.
Oh.
They learned to take people up in them and stuff. And so it was kind of, it was before airplanes. And that's what people were like, oh, this is going to be the future. But then.
It looks so slow.
In 1925, Goodyear Tire, and I feel like Goodyear is still the ones you see.
Mm-hmm.
Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company began building airships of the blimp design, and these aircrafts were used for advertising, for military purposes throughout World War II. As time went on, though, the technology of airplanes and helicopters continued to advance and became more popular. And the decline of the blimp or airships was then accelerated after a number of crashes occurred. So they started crashing more often.
The blimps?
Yes. But there's one like notable crash. It's kind of like the most famous one. It was a German airship called Hindenburg, and it burst into flames. It was landing in New Jersey, and it killed 35 people. And
on the
after
blimp?
That, yeah,
oh.
they that were aboard it. So after that, it kind of marked the end of it being like a means of public transportation, especially because airplanes kind of took over at that point. So they were still used at times when the need to be able to like hover for a long period of time outweighed the need for speed and maneuverability. And in the modern era, blimps are used for advertising, freight transportation, tourism, sporting events, blah, blah, blah.
So people can still go up in them.
Yes. But
don't catch
the
me
main
up there.
Reason that you don't really see these in the sky anymore is because it is incredibly expensive to like run them and build them and stuff. So they're super expensive to build. They're very expensive to fly. I was reading that it can cost up to $100,000 for one trip. So,
oh my gosh,
people are like, this is not worth it. And the prices of helium, which is like how they're
run, I was gonna say the gas is probably super expensive,
keeps going up due to like helium shortages and stuff. So, according to Federal Aviation Administration, only 128 people in the United States are qualified to fly these blimps.
Jeez,
airships, and only 17 of them are paid to do it full time. 17 people in the United States.
Wow. So if you meet one. That's a cool special job.
On average, it takes pilots, this is for planes, 10 to 15 hours to learn how to fly a single engine plane, which that's terrifying me.
Yeah.
10 to 15 hours? You're not taking me up in a plane.
No. One day? One full day?
In order for a pilot to go on their first solo trip in a blimp, it takes 250 to 400 hours of training. So it's like,
oh, wow,
astronomically, I think, more complicated.
To be to fly alone in a blimp seems terrifying.
That's terrifying. So another main reason for like the lack of blimps and stuff is the technical advances of drones. Like that was sometimes, it's just easier and cheaper to capture things from an aerial view via a drone than a massive blimp. And it's a lot less expensive.
Pretty much they're just a novelty now.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're still sometimes used for advertising purposes, but they're saying if you see a blimp in the air, like it's pretty rare to see that.
Wow.
I saw one. It wasn't in the air, actually. It was like on the ground, but Leif and I were driving past one in LA and we were talking about blimps and I was like, literally, what is a blimp? Like, what is the point?
Interesting.
So most of them also only have seats for two pilots and 15 passengers. Now.
You sit at the bottom?
Yeah. And then the balloon is like above you.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So there you have it.
Yeah. Now you know.
That's my
blimp.
That's my blimp. My blip on the blimp. I didn't realize how rare they were. Like,
I feel like I've heard that. Yeah. That there's only like 20 or something. So crazy.
It's crazy. So if you see one,
yeah,
take a photo, tag us.
Make a wish.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the optical illusion where planes look like they're staying still in the air? Have you ever witnessed that?
Mm-hmm.
It freaks me out because I will stare at it and I'm like, that plane is not moving. That plane is still in the air.
What makes it feel like that?
I don't know. I've tried to look it up. I've seen it twice and it both times because maybe it's because when you're driving, the speed you're going. But I'm like, that thing is going fast. Shouldn't it have passed the freeway by now?
That is a freaky thing to.
It literally just looks like it's suspended in air. That freaks me out. Okay. Well, my first one is a telescope.
I am already baffled and bewildered.
I texted JC last night when I was researching this. And said, I am getting so sleepy researching this. It's reminding me of doing homework. So much science. And he was explaining it so well. But still, I was like, this is a lot of information for my pregnant mind to intake.
And then brain.
Not only intake and be like, okay, yeah, but know it well enough to then explain it myself. Woo! Let me just say, if you are a rocket scientist or somebody working for NASA who does space stuff, you are built different. You're so smart. Shout out. I doubt they listen to this podcast. They're like,
I'm sure you're listening.
To this episode specifically. Mm-hmm. Okay. So everyone knows what a telescope is, obviously. Long distance. And the thing that I don't understand or didn't understand, I guess, until now about telescopes is how if you're looking at the moon or something or a star, you can see so much detail on it. Like how does that little tube make you see more, even with cameras? Like, how am I zooming in and seeing something my naked eye can't?
Right.
Like, so what about
that? Detail.
And how am I just doing with this? Like, nothing's actually getting closer to it, you know? Okay, well, I'll explain why. So, long distance viewing, specifically with telescopes to literal space.
Yeah, that's beyond. Because it's like, with a camera, it's like, okay, the lens, like the magnifier, whatever. It's like, you can kind of comprehend, but to space?
No.
What do you mean?
See the craters of the moon? What do you mean? So long distance viewing was what our naked eye can't do or see, relies on two things, gathering as much light as possible and increasing the apparent size of the distant object.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a camera. When I was listening to and reading about this, I was like, this is reminding me of things I've heard about cameras and how cameras work a little bit with the lenses and whatever. Okay, so with telescope, they do this with the lenses. So there's obviously two lenses. One is the objective lens, which is closer to the object, and then one is your eye lens, you know, the one that's closer to your eye.
Mm-hmm.
So the lenses are curved pieces of glass that bend and refract light as it passes through air. I didn't want to get into that. Like,
no, let's stop you there.
Light passing through air just will never make sense to me, but just pretend it does. So a telescope uses those two pieces of glass that I was talking about connected through a tube. Mm-hmm. Light traveling from a distant object, from that distant object, say you are looking at the moon, that light is reflected from the sun, whatever. Light traveling from that object comes to you in parallel rays. I don't know what that means, but parallel rays of the
R-A-Y-S. You visualize it.
Yes.
Rays. Okay.
If you visualize it like five yellow rays, just picture that. Okay.
Okay.
Parallel rays coming towards your the end of your telescope. The rays then, oh wait, sorry. They come at you in parallel rays, and when they reach the first lens, since it's bulging out, since it's curved, mm-hmm. it refracts. So the rays then bend towards each other. So imagine those rays like now heading towards each other mm-hmm. to kind of like meet at a focal point. And they get closer and closer to each other as they travel down the tube to the other lens, closer to your eye, okay?
Okay.
So then they meet at a focal point, those rays. That is then what, when they meet, for some reason, it flips the image upside down. Have you ever heard that about like your retina? Like the way you see things too? Like when you, the way the light reflects it, the image is upside down. But then somehow it gets flipped upright in your eye. I don't know how it does in your eye, but that's what the eye lens does. So okay. once those rays meet, flips the image upside down, and it brings that image closer to you. And then the eye lens makes it flip upside and brings it to your eye. So basically the light brings the picture to you, brings
so
that virtual image to you.
How on earth did someone figure this out and
that's
create
my
it
question.
And invent it?
Like, exactly.
I will never be able to.
It was actually, I didn't write this part down because I was just focused on the how, but it was a guy who made glasses a long time ago.
Okay.
I think in Europe, he was, you know, figuring out how to magnify things. And he figured out a way to magnify things by three times, which was like crazy because he was making spectacles for people, mm-hmm. you know, eyeglasses, whatever. And then I somehow turned into this telescope.
Okay.
So. The objective lens, since that's the big one at the end, and how much light it can gather depends on how big it is. So if you want to see something.
How big the telescope is?
Yes. Or how big that lens is.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
But yeah. So if you want to see something really far, you need a wider, bigger lens. Not necessarily something for like closer to it. So it can get more light. But it was saying that sometimes when you have a really big lens, light can get lost and you can. It's like looking through. Looking at your reflection through a car window instead of a mirror, like then the image is kind of blurry. So that's why we have observatories to have like those huge telescopes that can see like asteroids and different planets and all those crazy things because they need space for like a really wide lens to get more light to see something. Isn't that crazy?
Interesting.
So there's different kinds of telescopes. Like I was saying, some of them do use mirrors so that they don't lose light. That they lost me at that when they were talking about the way the light reflects on the mirror in the telescope, whatever. I was like, I'm good with knowing how.
We can only handle
so
much.
We can only handle so much. But anyways, that's the telescope.
Wow.
That's how it works.
The more you know.
The more you know. It basically uses light to bring the image closer to your eye.
So I'm sure that's similar to how binoculars work.
Yeah.
But less intense maybe because.
And that's how camera lenses work too.
Yeah. All of it.
Yeah.
And how people figure that out will never be lost on me.
No.
It will be lost on me. I will not understand it.
I want to know, like, how do you see the rays?
Yeah, the rays.
Parallel rays. What do you
what
mean?
What is that? Next topic. Parallel rays.
Take note.
Because we don't even know what that means.
We can only go so deep.
This is making me want to look in a telescope, though. Like,
I
have not done that in a long time.
I know. It's actually
I wonder
so
how much a telescope is. Like how much money it costs.
Yeah, it depends.
It's gotta be so expensive.
Probably. Some people, like really rich people, you know they always have those big ones in their like observatory or their library or whatever. Their study.
Mm-hmm.
Those are cool.
Those are cool. Okay, my next one is kind of depressing, but it's animal testing.
Oh.
The reason I was like about this is because, have you seen the memes where it'll be like, this is literally what I thought they meant by animal testing? Yeah. It's like a bunny with its nails painted.
Yes.
That's how I feel. I'm like, well, what are they really doing?
Duh.
So let's get into it. This was interesting to me when I was researching this. So cosmetic animal testing is banned in many parts of the world, including Colombia, the European nation, United Kingdom, India, and Norway. Cosmetics that have been produced without any testing on animals are sometimes known as cruelty-free cosmetics. So that when you see something that says cruelty-free, that means they did not test on animals. Using animal testing in the development of cosmetics may involve testing either a finished product or individual ingredients of the finished product on animals, often rabbits, aww, mice, rats, monkeys, dogs, guinea pigs, sometimes other animals. So
this is sad.
I know. And then when I was reading it more, I was like, okay, so methods of testing cosmetics on animals include various tests. They're categorized differently based on which area the cosmetics will be used for. One new ingredient in any cosmetic product used in these tests could lead to the deaths of at least 1,400 animals.
Not the bunnies.
I know.
Oh, even mice. I know people hate mice, but that's not nice to just be shooting mice up and killing them.
No, it's sad. So when I was reading more about it, typically the animal test for cosmetics, like what they're actually doing is they're doing skin and eye irritation tests with like different chemicals. So they'll like rub chemicals onto the shape. They'll like shave their skin and rub chemicals on it or drip them into the eyes of rabbits. Isn't that so sad?
Who's doing this job?
I know this is really depressing, you guys, but it's actually really...
No, you need
like,
to know.
It is interesting and I feel like it's good to know about because yeah. I literally was like, oh, they're putting like lip gloss on...
Yeah,
on a monkey. I don't know. Like,
to
I just,
test how well it goes with their undertones.
Yeah, like I just... I guess I wasn't really...
Yeah.
Whenever I hear animal testing, I just... You hear it so often. No yeah. animal testing or they do animal testing and I just feel like I didn't know the depths of it.
Mm-hmm.
So... Or they were repeatedly like... orally force feed them with different things to look for signs of general illness, specific health hazards, birth defects, and even
them letting them get pregnant, have babies to see how it affects their young.
I know.
That's so sad.
And even this is widely condemned, but they'll do like lethal dose tests in which animals are forced to swallow massive amounts of a certain chemical to determine the dose that that would cause death. I know.
Oh my gosh. That's
it's
horrible.
Actually horrible. So basically in 1937, a mistake was made that ended up changing the pharmaceutical industry drastically. A company created a medicine to treat like an infection. And without any scientific research, the medicine, they just put it out on the shelves. Mm-hmm. But then that medicine turned out to be poisonous. And it led to like over 100 deaths because they didn't test yeah. it before. And so that epidemic led to like a law being passed where it basically enforced more rigorous guidelines
for
on
testing
and like cosmetic products and all that. So after the law was passed, companies looked to animals to test their products. And that's kind of why animal testing began.
Yeah.
So
that is so sad. Also, though, how else can they test? Like what when they say cruelty free, what do they test on?
Thank you for asking.
Oh.
Here are the alternatives that people use or the companies use. The alternatives to animal testing would basically be using safe ingredients from a list of 5,000 that have already been tested in conjunction with like modern methods.
Yeah, don't let them die in vain.
Yeah, so it's like then the need for animal testing is negated. There's also reconstructed artificial human skin models that have been being made that are obviously that's not an animal, so they can test them with like similar skin tissues.
Oh.
And then, like, artificial skin can imitate the actual human skin that's being tested. And there's a bunch of different things that have been being created
yeah.
that are like that. So there's lab-grown tissues that are a great alternative. However, a lot of people, like, I think it's, from what I was gathering, a lot more expensive, time-consuming. Like, it's anything you're doing the right way, quote-unquote, is going to be, like, a hurdle.
Yeah.
I think it's easier to do animal testing, which is why a lot of companies are not cruelty-free because it's just like we can get this product out
cheaper.
Faster. Yeah. Yeah. It says many companies have not made the switch for many reasons. One of them being the time it takes for lab-grown tissues to be usable.
Mm.
And animals just like mature quickly and you can just use them quickly.
Yeah.
And so if people aren't passionate about that, then they're just going to do the easier route, which is to test on animals. That was pretty much it that I had looked at. And I'm sure there's way more you could deep dive on. There was, it was explaining in detail the different tests they do. I mean, I was kind of saying like, oh, the skin irritability and the toxicity and stuff, but they're kind of go into detail of like just how much damage can be done and how many animals can be done. It's, this whole situation was kind of reminding me, I'm not trying to equate the two, but like of the Harambe thing where it's like
Harambe. I haven't heard that name in years. I genuinely first heard like Harambe.
But do you know what I mean? It's where it's like this moral dilemma of, you know, because people.
The human or the animal. Yeah,
because people could argue. Obviously, I don't think anyone wants animals to just die. But people would be like, well, then how? It's kind of like you said. It's like, okay, so what is the alternative? Because how we don't want like thousands of people to die either, obviously. So we want to make sure what we're doing is safe.
Yeah.
But it is kind of just like, when you really think about it, all of this stuff that we're testing on animals is not necessary. It's like, do we really, again, did we really need the Kylie lip balm to be tested on the bunny?
Yeah.
We're good. Don't come out with the lip balm.
Allegedly.
No, I don't know if she's cruelty-free. Don't worry. She came out with another brand in the time period that we freaking were talking about her.
Was it the drink?
Yeah.
Like maybe she's, I think she might just be an ambassador. I don't know if that's her brand.
She's been posting a lot about it. And then Kendall posted, it was like, drink 818's little sister. Maybe she is an ambassador, but either way, she's a huge part of it.
Oh my gosh, girly.
I'm going to see if, oh, that's like one of the first things that comes up. They're all cruelty-free. Kylie's.
Slay, Kylie.
Lip product, or Kylie's products, her cosmetic, skin, and Kylie Baby. They do not test products on animals.
Love that.
Thank you, Kylie.
Thanks, Kylie. The bunnies, thank you.
Yeah. Anyway, that is a new thing to be,
it
to
is
consider.
Good,
it really is.
There's a lot of little markings or certifications on things nowadays that, you know, like it is vegan or it's cruelty free or whatever, especially with skincare makeup. It's like, oh, it's green, whatever. It's eco-friendly.
Yeah.
And you just hear these things. You're like, oh, yeah, OK, that sounds nice. But how important is it? So it's good to know why people, because those brands and companies that get those certifications, it is the reason why some of them are more expensive or, you know, less likely to restock every single day. So it's good to know why you're spending more money on it if you care about that
stuff. Because like it says here, I'm pretty sure it is more expensive, it is more time consuming to be cruelty free,
to be ethical in general.
To be ethical, it is. It's like that's why fast fashion or these really, really cheap brands, that's why they're so cheap, is because they're
cutting corners
so
and cutting lives. Wow, that's really sad.
Sorry to bring the mood down, but I thought it was important.
We are going to take a quick ad break to talk about the Nike Indie Bra and the Universet Legging. We are so excited about this sponsorship. We've both been wearing Nike gear since we were teenagers for any sports we were in or physical activities. We always know that we can rely on Nike. So how do you take your breaks? Do you go for a walk or a workout class? Do you like to meal plan, run to the grocery store, maybe grab coffee with a friend? You can do all of that and more in style with the Nike Indie Bra and Universet Legging. The Indie Bra now comes in 3 support levels, low, medium, and high. I personally like a high support, secure feeling bra for when I'm running or doing a cycling class, but I don't want to be wearing that all day. I like something lighter with thinner straps and smoother edges for running errands or doing things around the house. And luckily, the Nike Indie Bra has both of those options and a medium option for the in-between. All 3 are so soft and look so flattering on. The Nike Universet Leggings are perfect to pair with the Indie Bra. They really help smooth and lift, stretching freely with your every move. Wherever your workout takes you, their squat-proof, mid-weight, and finish-smooth fabric gives you uncompromising comfort and feels cool and sleek to the touch. Plus, they're durable enough for you to flex, wash, and wear again and again. They're the pair you'll reach for whether you need something for your everyday run, everyday practice, or just every day. Find your feel with Nike bras and leggings that deliver supportive flexibility and comfort for whatever your day brings. Shop now at Nike.com, and that will be linked in the show notes for you guys, as always.
This podcast is sponsored by Squarespace, and what a perfect sponsor to have. This is one of my favorites because Squarespace has been there for me through a lot of different businesses. Literally, since I began my career, I have used Squarespace for basically every little venture I've ever had. Same with me and Chelsea, all of our ventures together, we have used Squarespace. So it is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Whether you're just starting out or managing a growing brand, Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. You can choose from so many different website templates that they have, and A lot of them are really, really beautiful. They all look very professional and they're user-friendly. They're easy to use. And you can kind of just like insert your text and your pictures and all the other work is done for you, which is so nice, especially if you're not into coding or, you know, you don't know all the ins and outs of the technology that goes behind building a website. It just makes it extremely easy.
Something really amazing about Squarespace is it makes it super easy to drive sales and engage your audience with Squarespace email campaigns. So you can easily collect email subscribers on your site and build connections and repeat business through regular email updates. Introduce your brand to new subscribers with welcome emails, maybe announce an upcoming sale or send your top customers a discount code. This is so important if you are running a small business, and this is just a really great feature if you're running any kind of business. They also make it easy to look at your insights that you can use to grow your business. So you can learn where your site visits and sales are coming from and analyze which channels are most effective. It's really helpful to know like your top keywords or most popular products and content so that you can maybe push those a little bit more. So go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to www.squarespace.com/whatwesaid to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. It'll be linked in the show notes for you guys. Go check it out. You know what I had this morning to get my daily dose of dates down? If you know, you know. I put my 6 dates in with some Malk oat milk. So good. So simple. Makes it so easy to drink. And I just love Malk so much. I use it with when I make my homemade matcha or, you know, any kind of morning beverage. I use it with all my smoothies. I'll even use it when I have cereal. It's my go-to. And now they've launched a new shelf-stable version of their unsweetened almond and original oat milk. It's made with the same ingredients and same great taste, just now available in a convenient option for stocking up without worrying about fridge space. So you can find it now at Whole Foods across the country and on Amazon in a convenient 6-pack. I actually was at Whole Foods the other day and I grabbed a couple of the shelf ones just to have on hand because it's so nice to not have to worry like, oh, I woke up and there's no milk in the fridge. Well, now you have it in your pantry and you can just use it right then.
I'm really happy that we have a discount code for you guys because this is one of my favorite brands. If you watch my vlogs, I use Malk constantly, like Chelsea said, for at home smoothies, chais, matchas, anything. And the reason that I love it so much is because it has a great taste without all the fillers, gums, seed oils, artificial flavors, and a lot of other additives that so many of the other plant-based milks unfortunately use. So Malk is crafted with the same 3 core ingredients that you know and trust. The almond Malk is made with just organic almonds, filtered water, and Himalayan pink salt, and that's it. Same with oat Malk. It's just organic, gluten-free oats, filtered watered, and Himalayan pink salt. And all their products are certified organic and glyphosate-free. Simply made with nothing to hide. You can find shelf-stable Malk at your local Whole Foods or in a convenient 6-pack on Amazon. So head to your local Whole Foods to find shelf-stable Malk or grab it in a convenient 6-pack on Amazon. Use code 15WHATWESAID for 15% off a 6-pack of shelf-stable Malk on Amazon. Go check it out.
Well, to move on to something a little lighter, but just as dirty, dry cleaning, okay?
Dry cleaning.
Dry cleaning and laundry.
Yeah.
A little bit of both, like detergent. How am I putting this shirt into the washing machine? It has mud stains on it, and then it comes out
perfectly
after
clean.
No one went in there, you know, and spot cleaned it. How is it coming out? Anyways, we're going to find out. First of all, let's do dry cleaning, okay? So what happens when you take... Do you take things to the dry cleaner often?
Not very often at all.
I did a lot when we were touring. Like, I would take my tour outfits because they smelled so bad.
Our tour outfits smelled...
I can't... Some of mine, the dry cleaner couldn't even fix it.
They couldn't even touch it.
No, the smell of...
Smell of those feathers.
Those feathers, I had to throw the feathers away. The feathers kept the stench of my BO and just like the... No, not the feathers. They were like stuck in your armpit all night.
Yes, because it was like a tube top feather thing.
And adrenaline sweat for me, that smells horrible. Way worse than just like my normal day sweat.
That was my final straw actually of going back to toxic deodorant.
Yeah.
Speaking of, well, I'm sure that's not cruelty free. But that was literally my final straw on tour with those feathers. That was the night I said, this ends now.
Yeah,
because I smell so bad.
I'm hugging people.
I'm meeting people. And this non-toxic deodorant is not cutting it.
Yeah. I actually found one non-toxic deodorant that actually works. And I've kept trying.
I've heard that one before.
No, Kate posted about it. She was like, I swear, you guys.
Wait, what's the brand?
I can't even pronounce it. It's Agent Nature.
Okay, I've seen that actually.
It's like in a little black thing. It actually works so well.
Really?
Yeah. Like okay, the only one I've really found out that works as well as it. I mean,
during pregnancy, nothing works for me.
Yeah.
So
no, my pregnancy sweat, my postpartum, I'm not looking forward to that.
I need to get that one though. I have tried a lot. And for me,
and that one has a scent, like has, it smells too. So it's not, sometimes when they're like, no fragrance, no nothing.
You're like, I need something to cover
something, up. Even if I start sweating a little bit.
I think for me, it's that they'll work for a time and then they'll stop working.
This one's worked quickly forever. Like as long as I've used it.
I'm interested. You got me.
Except for I used it when I was sick. So sometimes the smell of it, I can't use it anymore. I'll use something else.
Like when you were nauseous?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Mm. Okay. Anyways, back to dry cleaning. So here's how it starts. If you drop something off at the dry cleaners, a lot of people will dry clean, obviously, their suits, blazers. I will drop off blazers if it's like a nice, you know, material like silk. Something that can't get water on it that will ruin it. So you bring it in. First of all, they bring it back there. They inspect it for missing buttons. You know, loose seams, stains, make sure nothing's left in your pockets, etc. And then they tag it with like a little iron-on tag. Then they will, if it does have stains, they'll pre-treat the stains with a solution or something and give that little stain, you know, extra love and care with specific like solvents or things like that that will, you know, if it's an oil stain, they use something specific. If it's like a pen stain, whatever. So after they do that, most items will go into this huge, it looks like a huge washing machine, pretty much. It's a huge dry cleaning machine where it tumbles around in a solvent. So it does get wet. It's not perfectly dry the whole time.
Okay.
But it's not water. It's, yeah. I kind of was looking into what a solvent specifically is. It's wet, but it's not water. That's what I kept saying. It's
okay.
It's a liquid, but it's not water. And it's, you know, tumbled around in there like a washing machine with that specific solvent. So they usually use synthetic petroleum, something called siloxane, or liquid carbon dioxide. A lot of times they've actually been changing.
What? They're calling it dry cleaning, but there is some wetness.
Yeah. They do get wet. Your clothes get wet.
Okay.
But it's called dry cleaning because it's not water.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure. And they've been starting to, speaking of eco-friendly, they've been starting to use different solvents because they used to use something called PERC, which is like really bad for the people working there. It's like very
toxic.
Yeah. So they go through like this gentle agitation process in these machines with the solvent. Then the machine extracts that solvent from the clothing. I saw a couple different things where they either put them in a different machine to do this, like almost like a dryer, or sometimes the machine itself would extract the solvent. But it's dried in that way. I was trying to figure out how it extracts the solvent without like heating it a lot.
Yeah.
But it does. That's all they'd be like, and then it extracts the solvent, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay. So
blazing over that part. Okay.
Yeah. That's sorcery still. That's still unknown. But then they'll check again for lingering stains, like if something didn't come out. And what I thought was really cool, so they bring it to like a spotting board and they have what looks like a little hose that you would fill up your tire with. And they use these petals to do specific treatments to like rub on that spot. So say you have a really delicate dress, like a silk dress, and you got something on it. They'll use that little hose, like they'll put a treatment on it, like rub on it. Mm. And then they'll use a hose to blow steam through the garment and then vacuum it away and then dry it with the like air hose. And if you see, you can look up how they do it. And it is so satisfying to just see the stain just like disappear.
Ooh, that does sound satisfying.
Yeah. And then they go into a pressing section. So they'll bring it into this place with all these huge machines to press, like a blazer. It'll be set upright and they'll put stuff in the arms. They just have a lot of specific equipment to make sure that your clothes come out crisp. They'll basically steam it or press it, iron it, whatever. And you have to be, they use automated machines, but they also use some machines that you have to be like an expert to use them to press them. And so after that, they wrap it up. They put it in the little plastic thing, put it on that thing that we all know, that conveyor belt looking thing they hang it up. And then they're packaged it and you're done.
That is interesting to hear that because it's actually concerning to me how much I don't think about those things. Like,
no.
I just bring it. It's like, oh, yeah, I'd bring it to the dry cleaner. But it's like, I have no idea what you're doing with that thing. No. I have not a clue what's happening.
How are you cleaning that? Like, I always think that. I'm like, how are you cleaning this very, like, complicated piece?
Yeah. It also makes sense why you would pay them good money to be getting in the weeds with that.
Especially if it's something that has embellishment. Mm-hmm. They were showing some pieces that had a lot of like sequins or things like that on it where it's like, you can't throw that in the washer.
No.
It's crazy. Okay, so the last little part is I was looking into how a laundry machine worked and it's like has a drum, it has, you know, things that agitate it so it keeps the clothes moving around and separated so they don't get balled up, whatever. Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, I could have guessed that. But detergent, that's what was really throwing me off. I'm like, how does this, you know, solution take the stains out of my clothes?
Yeah.
Without someone taking them. Like they, what?
So, taking them, what do you mean?
Like kind of how I was watching them do the spot treatment. It was like they kind of were vacuuming like pushing it out themselves, focusing on that one stain. But how does it know where the stains are? You know what I mean?
It's giving, how does the Advil know where your pain is?
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, so this is how detergent works. I thought this was very fascinating. Soaps and detergents are made from long molecules that contain a head and a tail. These molecules are called surfactants. There's like, if you look at a diagram, it looks kind of like how you would picture a sperm looking, like a little head and a little tail. Mm. That's the only molecule I ever see like diagrams of, I feel like. The head of the molecule is attracted to water, so it's hydrophilic. And the tail is attracted to grease and dirt, so it's hydrophobic. When the detergent molecules meet grease on clothes, the tails are drawn into the grease. So imagine like them circling around it, the tails are going into the grease on the clothes, but the heads still sit in the water.
Wow, that's very high tech.
The attractive forces between the head groups and the water are so strong that the grease is lifted away from the surface.
Wow.
So it's like a little, it's like a little herd of oxen that go over there, put their butts into the stain, and then pull it out, and then it gets picked up, and now it's in the water.
Wow.
So the blob of grease is now completely surrounded by the detergent molecules and is broken into smaller pieces, which are washed away by the water.
Wowza.
Very interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So
I'm just grateful for smart people.
I know. Who can figure that out?
Thank you for getting the stains out of my clothes. I don't know about the hydrophobic and the hydrophilic.
No.
But
I'm glad you do.
But I'm glad you figured that out.
Yeah, 100%. I thought that was very interesting because that's kind of how soap is too.
Yeah. I was going to say it's kind of how any like cleaner is. Yeah. Because like, it goes like, in and attacks the grease or whatever. Wowza.
Well, there you have it. Now you know.
As my last one, when Leif and I were in the car and I was like, what are some things I don't understand? Leif's like, I know one. I was like, what? he's like, I know something you don't understand. I said, what? He's like, how birds mate. He's like, every time we're watching a like an animal show,
he's saying
you always with the birds and the fish, they'll like mount each other for 2 seconds and fly away. And they're like, and now she's pregnant. And he's like, sorry. Like, or I'm always like, sorry.
Yeah.
And I was like, you're right. I still don't know the ins and outs. I didn't do the fish one. So that could be a different. Because I was just getting too in the weeds with the birds. So how birds mate. Birds, male birds do not have a penis.
Okay.
So, which I didn't think they did.
Yeah.
That's why, like, where, I was so confused. Where is it? I'm like, where is it? Like, does it come out tiny and like, I'm not seeing it.
Embarrassing.
Shaming them. I'm like, eee. But because they'll literally mount a girl bird. But anyway, you know, on those nature shows and stuff. So both male and female have an avian vent or a cloaca. That's what it's called.
Ooh, that
and
sounds pretty.
And it's called a cloacal kiss. I hope I'm saying those two things.
Wow, sounding so romantic.
Yeah, it's not as romantic as we might think. Later on, you'll find out.
Okay.
So they mate by briefly touching their cloacas so that sperm can pass from male to female. So literally.
Okay, sounding sexy.
It's like two like little vents and one. Well, I think I should read this because it's.
Okay.
Anyway. So inside the bodies, males have testicles.
Okay. So they do have testicles.
So they can like produce sperm, and females have one ovary. And birds, this is so interesting. Birds' reproductive organs change during the year. So as seasonal temperatures, light levels, and food availability signal the start of the mating season, the cloaca swells and expands. And then once breeding is done, the cloaca and other reproductive organs shrink to minimize weight for flying.
Slay. It's like ovulation.
Yeah. And for migration and stuff. So scientists believe that just 1 to 2% of the sperm that is ejaculated makes it into the female. So sometimes they have to like kiss a few times.
Oh.
So the actual
Where are they?
Act.
Where's the vents?
Anywhere. Oh, I thought you meant when they do it. I'm like, you can do it anywhere.
Anywhere.
In their nest. In the trees, the nest, on the ground.
On the car.
The air. It's like
the same place on both.
I actually don't know exactly the location. It's like somewhere kind of in the region that you would expect.
Okay. It's not some obscene place where it's like on their chest or something.
I don't think so. Because again, it looks like the boy just like literally is like flying and like literally drops on her for 2 seconds and then that's it.
Oh.
So it has to be somewhere, I don't know.
Doggy style.
I guess so. So anyway, sometimes they have to do it a few times because it might not stick. I know what that's like. I know what that insemination is like. So once it happens, the female may start producing eggs in a couple of days or it may be months. She's capable of holding onto sperm within her body until the conditions are right for nesting.
Oh.
So some males will leave straight after the act and like have nothing to do with the nesting.
So classic.
Have nothing to do with raising the chicks. But some of them like nest and are family.
They really are just like us.
I know.
It's a reflection of our society.
So many birds do pair up for one mating season, for a year, or for life. It's like different.
Aww. Depending on maybe the breed or something.
Probably. But this may not mean they're sexually exclusive.
Oh, we got cheaters.
They're still hoes. So because of the need to ensure insemination, birds will mate several times with different partners during the season. So when the female's body clock tells her that it's the right time to start producing eggs, she may have sperm from several different partners inside of her. And so the eggs she lays may have different fathers.
Why am I, for the girls, when you said like the girls will have it? At first, I thought you just meant like the boys will go do a couple. I'm just like, oh my gosh, rolling my eyes. And you're like, the girls. I'm like,
that's
slay
fine.
Queen. Give her more chances.
Give her more chances to produce.
Yeah. She needs all she can get.
But because birds of the same species build nests that look quite similar, it's not uncommon for a female to lay her eggs in more than one nest. The result is that two birds may raise some chicks that are not biologically related to one or both of them. But this doesn't cause any drama, they said.
It takes a village.
It does. So experts say that birds bond socially rather than sexually. My last note on this, ducks have a penis. Thought that was interesting.
They do?
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Did you see it?
I didn't look it up, but they were saying that like water, some of the water birds, ducks, swans, whatever they have, they like have a penis. I don't know how they're.
Where?
We can look
it up.
I've
never really looked under a duck, but.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But basically just like a quick little kiss for the birds. And I don't even know about the fish. Do you know how fish mate?
No, I have no clue.
I don't either.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I've seen whales or sharks or dolphins on those nature shows where they're like swimming on top of each other.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, how else would they, I guess? You know what's a terrifying fact about reproduction for animals is that cat penises have barbed. They're barbed.
I'm sorry?
They have like spikes on them. So that's why when you hear cats mating, or like you think they're fighting, but it's actually the girl because it like sticks in and the spikes come out and it's stuck.
No.
And then when he's done.
Why does it do that? What
make
is
sure
the reason
she doesn't
for
run
that?
Away. I'm pretty sure. Let me fact check that.
Oh.
Hopefully no pictures.
That's
I'm not ready
sounding
for that.
Problematic. So that she doesn't run away. Okay.
Yeah. And she's screaming. Awesome.
Awesome. It's good.
Cat boy penis.
Me duck penis right now.
Barbed cat penis. Why is a male cat's penis barbed? Yeah. They have barbs because cats need to be stimulated into ovulation. Oh, okay. Maybe. That's the narrative the boy cats have.
Yeah. Who wrote this?
Yeah, who wrote this? The male cats?
Okay. I'm sorry to this.
That's not a penis.
It says it is, Chelsea.
So do they just come out when they're ready?
Look. I've never seen something quite like that. If you want to see a duck penis, look it up on your own terms.
I'm not okay with that. How does that? Where
That's
do they hide that? In
wild.
Their feathers until it comes?
I guess so.
Well, bad choice of words. Oh. Well, I'm glad. This is such a good. Wait,
this
were you done?
So educational, yes.
I was going to say, this is such a good lead in into my last topic, which
okay,
I will.
Slay.
I'll go over briefly. I won't spend too much time, but. My last one is childbirth, okay? So
wow.
I found this very fitting.
How can we even be brief with this one?
Yeah, we can't. But I wanted to give a little overview. Okay, so I've taken two birth courses now at this point. I'm no pro, and I still learn. This time when I took it, I still learned so much. But I was surprised at how little I knew about the entire process. I'm not going to get into like fertilization and all that crap. I'm just saying like the childbirth process of labor delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So basically the things that you need to know that you may not know. When you get to the end of your pregnancy, your baby is going to move down through your pelvis. Usually their head's down. You know, there's obviously different situations, but I'm talking about when the head is down, as it is the majority of the time, mm-hmm. into your pelvis. That's called when the head engages. So it sits in place over your cervix. So if you didn't know, the cervix is basically what's the plug that's not the plug, but what's holding your baby inside of you. And that is what dilates. Your cervix will open. And my course instructor was saying that at the beginning or in the middle of pregnancy, before you go into labor, your cervix is as thick as like the tip of your nose, like the cartilage in your nose.
Hmm.
And then it gets, when you are dilated to like an 8, your cervix then becomes as thin as your eyelid.
Oh, interesting.
So then it becomes like very stretchy, and that's when it can kind of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So basically when your labor starts, there's a couple things that happen, not always in the same order, but your water breaks. Your water breaking is your amniotic sac breaking, and that's the amniotic fluid that comes out of you. It's not pee. It doesn't come out of your pee hole. It comes out of your vagina, and you can't stop it. It's just like fluid leaking out. Which, since that baby's in the sac, once the sac breaks, the reason that it's like, okay,
I'm going into labor.
Yeah. Or maybe you already are in labor. I had to have my water broken when I was like 4 centimeters already. But then that nothing's holding that baby back besides the cervix. So then they can really start going down because the sac isn't holding the back anymore. They can't be born in their sac, obviously.
Yeah. I never really knew what water breaking meant or anything.
And it's kind of a...
Does that happen a lot? Like, naturally for people, I wonder how often.
I feel like it's not the most common thing. It's actually, I think I don't know. I didn't look into that. But I think from what I remember is that it's actually more often than not your water's going to break.
Like at the hospital or
something? Yeah, like before you go into labor. It's usually not the first sign of labor.
Oh, like, maybe like days before?
Yeah, it won't happen like days before.
Oh, it will not happen days before.
I mean, it can.
Yeah.
But also, once your water breaks, you are at a higher risk for infection. So you have to be on watch. You can't just like have your water broken for like 5 days.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So a lot of people, I think it's kind of part of the process, but it's not always the first. Because that's what you see in movies, that like their water breaks and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm in labor. Mm-hmm. But usually you would probably know a little before then. So there's your mucus plug coming out, which is a thing of mucus that's literally like plugging up the cervix. And once that falls out, it means that you're dilating. So like that thing falls out.
Is it obvious that when your mucus plug falls out?
For a lot of people, yes, you can miss it. But for most people,
like you're just like going to the bathroom?
Yeah, and it's like show. Oh. It's called show. It looks like you just blew the biggest snot thing of your life.
Oh, okay.
But it's on your toilet paper usually. But again, a lot of people for their labors are so different, or their just journeys are so different. Mm-hmm. You never know what's going to come first. Mm-hmm. For me, I started having, I think my mucus plug came out first. And then I started kind of cramping. And then I was in labor for a while before my water broke.
Mm.
After your water breaks, your baby's like ready to come. Okay, he's ready to come down she is ready to come through your birth canal. So this picture, that thing,
I don't understand,
starts coming out of that hole. Let me just show the YouTubers, okay? Zoom in if you
can. Unreal. How is that head going to get through there?
It's crazy.
Wild.
Okay. Let me speed through the rest of this really quick. So your pelvis is obviously located between your hip bones. That's where the baby comes out, obviously. Females typically have wider, flatter pelvises than males, as well as a wider pelvic cavity hole to allow the baby to pass through. During childbirth, the muscles at the top of your uterus contract and push your baby towards your cervix. That's what a contraction is your uterus is literally pushing the baby down from the top. I think it's called the fundus. It literally is like a muscle, and it will start to push the baby down.
No wonder that hurts.
Yeah.
When you're saying that, it's like, oh gosh. Like your uterus contracting and pushing an object through
just
your
like
body.
Flexing so hard to just get that baby out.
Wow.
It's crazy. And this is also working with a lot of release of hormones. So oxytocin is one of the main hormones that help you give birth. It brings on contractions and it just kind of helps the process go. So the bones and ligaments of your pelvis also move or stretch as the baby travels into the vagina. So your body's just kind of like morphing as this baby goes down, down, down your birth canal into your vagina. The baby's skull, this is freaky. The baby's skull is made up of 5 separate bones, which can cross over each other during labor. So that's why some babies have cone heads, or like their head can get kind of messed up and then it goes back to normal because they have these bones that can kind of morph however it needs to get out of the birth canal. Which is amazing. Like babies are so
malleable.
Yeah. They're so flimsy.
Flimsy. Yeah.
They really are. Like they're fragile, but they're also so flimsy. How they think, like sometimes when I say babies in the hospital, I'm like 2 seconds ago, that thing was being pushed down this little tube.
A little canal.
Like you wouldn't do that after they're out.
No.
But that's what they just did.
Yeah, true.
They're working hard too. So that's pretty much the basis. Obviously, they go out. Once you're dilated and effaced, that means you're wide open, you're flexible, your body's like pumping these hormones to make sure that it's stretchy enough so that the baby's head can just come right out. There's certain things that the baby has too that's really just amazing, honestly, that they have reflexes. If you ever push on like a newborn baby's back of their head, you'll notice that they like will push back, and that's to help them because usually babies come out, they're facing your back. And so their head does, it like kind of throws back when they come out.
In order to come out?
Yeah, like kind of against your pelvic bone or pubic bone, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have like a kicking reflex to help like kick themselves down your birth canal, like against the top of your
whatever. That's wild.
So yeah, so then you push the baby out. Great. They have the umbilical cord. The baby cuts the umbilical cord. If you don't know what the umbilical cord is.
The baby cuts it.
The baby.
The baby cuts it themselves.
His first sign of responsibility. No. Whoever will cut the umbilical cord is what they eat through. It's attached to their belly button and it's attached to the placenta. They cut the cord. Then you have to birth the placenta out. It's really not like some people say it's super painful. For me.
You have to like push. Like they're like, okay, now pushing the placenta out.
I think you might have to do like one little push. But for me, it was like.
I'm sure that's nothing in comparison to the
child. Yeah, I just pushed this humongous head out of my vagina. Like, what did I say it like that? Vagina.
My vagine.
My vagine. I don't like, care what you do concerns. To me now. Yeah. Like, and now I have my baby. So I'm like, whatever. And then your uterus contracts over the next couple of days with those hormones while you breastfeed. So that's one of them. It's like releasing oxytocin. It's this bonding love over your face.
I'm getting spooked. Can we be done with this one? I'm just kidding.
Can we move on? Pretend we don't know. It contracts all the way back down to literally, it starts out like literally this big, your uterus, which is the size of, I don't even know what it starts out. Like
when
size.
You're not pregnant?
Yeah, when you're not pregnant. Mm-hmm. It's like the size of your palm, maybe even smaller. I don't know. That's what your uterus is. By the time you are me at this point, your uterus is huge. It's literally the size of a freaking pumpkin or bigger. Like, it is massive. And then it has to come all the way back down. That's why people still look pregnant right after they give birth. Because your uterus is
still
not
going to
go back down. But it's good because you kind of still have little contractions afterwards for it to go back down. And then the baby's alive and you're
vibing.
They're off on their own. On their own, but...
They are now responsible for themselves.
Yeah, that's childbirth for you. That's an overview. It's very fascinating.
I'm queasy.
Me in high school, though, fainting when I watched a birth video for the first time.
Never forget.
It's so, even though it is shocking and it does kind of make me queasy, sometimes when I really think about it, I could never be a nurse. Whenever I watch a birth video, I was telling JC, I watched this one the other day in my class, that it was a very well-lit, graphic video of this baby coming out. I was sobbing because I was just like, this is incredible.
It really
is. This human is coming out of another human's body. His head just pops out. You see his face and then the rest of his body comes out and then this cord and then she cuts it and then what are you saying? I was half shocked, half just in awe and wonder at
it. Really is the human incredible. Body. I don't get it. The whole thing's a miracle.
It's really cool.
Well, hope we educated you guys on some things maybe you didn't understand too. Yeah, we can do a million more of these episodes because I don't understand much. So.
No, me neither.
I don't understand these lights that are on us. I don't understand much. So
anything.
The cameras. Thank you guys so much for watching or for listening. You can watch on YouTube. Our podcast YouTube channel is just called What We Said Podcast. We are What We Said Podcast on Instagram. If you want to follow along, if you want to be involved in any of our story episodes or anything like that, Chelsea is currently, when you're watching this, on maternity leave.
Mm-hmm.
And we're batching some episodes. So there'll be a few episodes without Chels, me with some fun special guests, just for honestly a few episodes. Mm-hmm. And then you'll be back because we know you guys like the
OGs.
The OGs, the original vibes. So, but we'll do a few fun guest episodes and then Chelsea will be back and then I'll be gone at some point. But that's later. You don't need to worry about that. Yeah.
Don't worry too much. Don't worry your three little heads about that. We'll take care of you.
Yes, of course. We love you guys so, so much. And
that's what we said.
Bye. Bye.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.